My neighbor remembers World War II. She lived in the Willamette Valley here in Oregon, and it was a different time. It seems kind of strange to us to think about it today, but at the time, people actually thought the Japanese were probably going to attack right here. They were probably going to invade right here. Betty remembers a pilot bailing out of an airplane someplace who fell in the Willamette River and apparently drowned, and the army came and fetched him and took him away, and nobody ever heard anything about him, and everybody just assumed it was a Japanese pilot. Well, it wasn't. But that kind of gives you an idea of the mindset on the West Coast during World War II. And if you weren't here at the time, it can seem a little bit startling. Of course, you have to remember the Japanese had just gotten done shelling Battery Russell up in Astoria and dropping a bomb on the forest in Brookings. Today's column is about the aircraft warning system and the eyes on the sky, people looking at the sky for potential Japanese airplanes during World War II. My name's Finn J.D. John. It's Thursday, April 26th, and I'm reading a column from the archives of the weekly newspaper column I write, Offbeat Oregon History. I do this every day. Of course, if you're subscribed to this podcast, you already know that. If you'd like to know more about this little daily podcast or about the newspaper column, stay tuned or check it out on offbeatoregon.com. Today's column ran in the newspapers on September 3rd, 2009, under the headline, Aircraft Warning System Spotted Few Enemies But Saved Many Friends. Here we go. During World War II, people on the West Coast had a certain feeling that they were on the front lines of the home front. This made sense. After all, the Nazis had to go through Britain's Royal Navy to get to the eastern seaboard and across the Atlantic, but on the other side of the world, across the Pacific from the Oregon coast, loomed one of the most powerful naval nations in the world, with aircraft carriers well stocked with the best carrier-based fighter built before 1943. That would be Japan. That fighter, of course, would be the A6M50, which doesn't get as much respect as it actually deserves for its time. To make things worse, after the Japanese invaded the Aleutian Islands in Alaska in 1942, they actually had a place from which they could launch land-based strikes against the lower 48. To meet this threat, the Army, then in control of the nation's main air forces, had a cadre of civilian volunteers whose job it was to watch for incoming aircraft. That would be the Aircraft Warning Service. The AWS was mainly staffed with people who couldn't be sent to fight. Women, younger teens, men above prime fighting age. It was run by a branch of the government called Civilian Defense, which worked with the Army in a supporting kind of role, kind of like a fire department's auxiliary does. The West Coast had about 150,000 eyes watching the sky for Japanese marauders. And in fact, some of those eyes did behold a Japanese marauder. The only enemy wartime airstrikes on U.S. territory happened in the early morning on September 9th, 1942, when a tiny seaplane that had been sneaked across the ocean in a special compartment in a Japanese submarine dropped two tiny bombs near Brookings, trying to start a forest fire. The plane tried again on September 29th, dropping another pair of 170-pounders near Cape Blanco. Both times it was spotted and reported by the AWS, and any resulting fires were put out without incident. The massive Japanese attacks never came, and presently the U.S. took the Aleutians back. But the AWS really proved its worth in another way. Local historian Bill McCash estimates the spotters saved the lives of at least 100 American aviators, likely more. Remember, this was in an age when navigation instruments were crude. Planes would fairly regularly get lost in the fog, especially along Oregon's notoriously misty south and central coast, and lumber along blindly until they ran out of fuel, which they sometimes usually did over some inhospitable piece of old-growth forest or open sea. With 150,000 eager pairs of eyes and ears on the ground, many of these planes were spotted and reported. Knowing their positions, the Army could radio the pilots and tell them where to go to either get out of the fog or find an airport. In one highly dramatic case, an AWS spotter saw a bomber ditching in the open sea off Seaside. The Navy quickly got on the scene and managed, despite a storm raging at the time, to rescue a crew member. Another swam to shore. Unfortunately, the rest drowned before the amphibious rescue plane got there. The AWS is one of McCash's great historical interests, and he is very interested in building a historical record of this vital but often overlooked part of Oregon's war effort. If you or someone you know was involved in the AWS during the big one, drop me a line at 541-357-2222 or finn@offbeatoregon.com and I'll put you in touch with him. That's it for today. You've been listening to an Offbeat Oregon History Archive column. If you'd like more, you can read hundreds of columns from the last 4 years on our website, offbeatoregon.com. On the website, you can also subscribe to get these podcasts delivered straight to your smartphone every day via RSS or iTunes, or you can join the conversation on the Facebook page or Twitter feed from links there. All my stuff is covered. Scratch that. All Offbeat Oregon stuff is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. See offbeatoregon.com/cc for details. Finally, if you're ever up in Corvallis and have time for a cup of something, look me up. I'm at Finn at offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon. Have a great day.